You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. We're back. We're back in action after one last road trip through the great state of Missouri. And a nice week off last week, kind of kicking back. In fact, we're getting this episode even out a day late on here on July 10th. Much needed time off. It's been really nice to just kind of kick back, relax, spend some time with the missus, take it easy. Enjoy some nice dinners out, some backyard barbecues, time with friends over the 4th, you know, all kinds of good stuff. And as a result, we've got all kinds of stuff to catch up on between, some news, some other questions that have been sent our way through our DMs and emails and all that kind of stuff, just what we got going on in the cellar, all, you know, sales, the wine industry in general, all the things have happened over the last couple of weeks, as you might imagine. So let's get into it, shall we? Just before that, of course, very quick, you know, follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. You can check us out on YouTube, Instagram, where we're most active. We're also on the Book of Face and the social network formerly known as Twitter. Be sure to like, subscribe, rate, and review the show so that we can kind of increase its, you know, reach and get it out there to more wine-loving people. Keep sharing it with your friends, wine-loving colleagues, all of that good stuff as well. Okay, let's just dive right in. So it's been, let's go over the last couple of weeks. So it's been, this is like typically how this shakes out. I mentioned this, I think, a couple weeks ago in the last episode recorded, maybe the episode before that, is that June and July are like our two slowest months in the year out here as far as like sales, visitation. It's a little challenging because we have a bottling run at the end of July, early August, and we go right into harvest. The expenses kind of crank up really, really fast. Like I think We basically, within like a couple of months, go through like a third or up to like a half of our annual budget in basically a single like quarter's worth of time. So it gets crazy really fast from here in basically 2 weeks from now, about even 10 days from now, actually, which is, you know, it's all good. Right. It's the nature of the business we all have in every industry that we all work in. Like, you know, there are the highs and the lows and when it's crazy and when it's not so crazy, and it comes and goes. Right. And it is always, you know, I'm always a little lethargic after a busy travel schedule. We were back out in Kansas City just this last 2 weeks ago, or going on 2 weeks ago now, for one last little quick couple of events, which was a blast. Shout out to Robert, as well as Sam out there and the team and the Shuttlecork team, and hanging out with a bunch of folks while we were there. Always a good time, as usual. And then very typically, like, I like to take at least a week, if I can get it, and basically try and do as little as possible. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, we're not necessarily going to travel and, like, go on vacation. I mean, we tried it. We did that last year. But, like, this year, it's like, we're going to stay. We're, you know, money is a little tight. The wine business is a little shaky just in general around the country, around the world. So let's, like, you know, not go too nuts with the vacation time. Which means we get to spend a lot of time at home. You know, I got to redo our front yard. We've been hanging out with friends, you know, doing things kind of cheap and cheerful with backyard barbecues and hanging out and carrying on. We did try a new restaurant last night even. We went to the new A16 restaurant that opened up here in Napa. Some of you who are familiar with San Francisco and A16, that's actually where I had one of my like favorite birthday dinners ever when I was turning like 26 or 27, I think. And the HBIC threw me a big surprise party in the marina with a bunch of my college friends and friends from Napa and all that stuff. It was cool to try it out last night. But that's the kind of stuff that we're doing, like laying low. There's honestly, not a lot of cellar work going on. You know, we're doing blending sessions to get ready for bottling, but that's just kind of me sitting out at the winery, tinkering. You know, it's work, but it's not like hard labor, you know. We're still hosting tastings and having guests out to the winery, but it's pretty easy going. I'm rocking the hat. Speaking of Missouri, I got my Country Club of Missouri hat. Thank you, Jim, for addition this to me. I think this was like a year ago or something. Last year when I was out that way. I finally put it to some good use. I dusted off the old golf clubs, went back to the range. I shot on 9 holes. I was a lovely 13 over par. It was a great day, which is, you know, tough considering I actually had 3 legitimate pars on that course and a couple really tough holes, as you might imagine when you end up 13 over. But for not having played, I have not played 9 holes, much less 18, like actually full round. I actually was trying to do the math. The last time I probably did that was close to, it would have been in my early 20s, maybe. It's been at least 15 years. If not, you know, back in like high school kind of era, it's been like up to like 20 years since I've actually like played a round of golf. So I'm pretty happy with it. I'm doing all right. Went to the driving range yesterday or the day before, maybe. Still working out. I think I've figured out why my swing had a very natural slice to it. We're trying to hit the ball straighter than we ever have. We're figuring it out. And, you know, it's a good excuse to go outside, hang out with some friends, crush a bottle of wine on the golf course. And, it's far less frustrating now. It was funny, during this first round of golf that I had played, we were playing Vintner's golf course in Yountville, right by the veterans' home there, as you're kind of getting into that stoplight that's in Yountville, you know. And there's a par 5 kind of on the backside of it. It's a pretty small course, but it's par 5. It's the only par 5 on the course. And the last time I played that course, on that hole, I was throwing clubs, screaming. I was so frustrated. That was back in high school, by the way. That was when I was trying out for the high school team when I was a freshman. And that was really kind of the last time I really was like into golf. You know, I was in lessons. My grandparents would sign me up for tournaments. We played out at Meadowood at the time because that was like the local, you know, course for us before it was as fancy as it got over the years, it's been a very solid like 20 years since I've played regularly. And then the last round was probably at least 15 years ago. So I'm pretty happy. I will take 13 over and a couple legit pars and one birdie opportunity that I completely missed, but fine. It's fine. We'll get there. It's a game that apparently I'm going to have to just get back into. It was actually way more fun than it's been way more fun than I thought it was going to be. I do need to get a proper set of clubs that fit me, but well, that's a different thing for a different time. Yeah. So yeah, it's been a really easy going couple of weeks. I hope that, you know, if you're out there listening to this, it's kind of been the same for you all, you know, enjoying a little bit of the summer. We got into the 4th, of course. We did a nice big pig roast over down with some friends down in Napa, which is always a good time. It's kind of their big annual like summer party. Outside of that, it's been a lot of just chilling out, which is great. But there's been plenty of stuff, you know, going on in the wine industry, of course. You know, it's less of the cellar work right now. Maybe you're getting ready for bottling runs and stuff like we are. You're kind of walking through vineyards, seeing how things are trucking along. But this is kind of like that nice downtime, like I was talking about, where you get to do some of these hobbies. You get to have a little bit of free time, and hopefully you can actually take a deep breath and enjoy it and not feel like, what am I missing? Because I definitely feel that way. Like when these downtimes happen, I start to get a little bit anxious, a little bit nervous, as like, expecting that I like missed something. Like I'm constantly checking my email, like there's got to be something I'm missing. But no, it's just, this is the natural flow of things. It's going to be a little bit mellow right now. That's okay. It's fine. Everything is fine. We're just gearing up for the really busy season. Enjoy the quiet. Enjoy the peace, right? We're doing the like bad boys like woo-sah right now, trying to just relax. That's what we're trying to do. But, you know, it's been fun chatting with people out at the winery. We've had some great tastings and folks out to the winery over the last couple weeks. There's one thing that kind of, like, keeps popping up recently. And this is kind of how, I mean, those of you who've been listening for a while, this is how this show kind of, like, evolves, is that it seems to go in, like, these ebbs and flows, where all of a sudden, like, a particular topic, you know, kind of pops up and it's kind of on everybody's mind, like within the industry. And it's maybe just something that's been in the news recently. And I think we're starting to see kind of the ripple effects of, you know, the article that we talked about, Lawrence Wine Estates, and kind of how they've been struggling with the experiences they've been offering. And I've talked about this with both clients and folks that have been sitting out at the winery. We've talked about this when we were on the road 2 weeks ago. Talked about this with winery colleagues and peers. And everyone seems to be on the same page that, like, the winery, like, experience thing is creating more problems than it's, like, solving right now. Now, we may have touched on this in the past, and we probably touched on this a little bit when we were talking, you know, Lauren's family and that article that came out. I can't remember what episode that was in. But, you know, it's worth a listen to the last couple episodes because I know it's in there somewhere. And I think it's the Your Wine Business is Losing Money episode. If you go back and listen to that, you'll know what we're talking about. But this is to give you all a little background. And you know, if you don't remember that episode or if you're new here, you're probably about 10, going on 15, 10 years ago. Maybe a little more than that. Wineries realized, because this is, we track this kind of stuff, that we realize that if we do like hosted like one-on-one tastings, we sell more wine. If we sit you down and we're at a table with you, like hanging out, and it's more of an experiential thing rather than just belling up to a bar with a crowd of people, we're going to sell you more wine. Statistically, that was shown in direct-to-consumer reports and winery sales, all this stuff. And as you know, wine clubs and this direct-to-consumer thing, which again is new within the basically the last 20, 25 years, it's still an evolving thing. So when this trend was kind of being, you know, seen, it was like, oh, well, we got to host more private tastings. We got to provide more of an experience rather than just a tasting bar. You know, there's this shift towards, you know, a more dialed-in kind of thing when you visited Napa in particular. And I think, you know, the more I've talked about it with people over the last couple of months, and specifically over the last like 2 weeks, everyone seems to be kind of the opinion that that kind of sucks. Like, there's no like real authenticity to some of these experiences. Like, it's, oh, you know, because let's be real here. When you sit down for a wine tasting, that's not really an authentic experience, right? That's not what you do at home. Maybe authentic's the wrong word to use, but that's not what you do at home necessarily. Like, you don't line up five different wines with five different glasses in your you know, kitchen island or whatever, kitchen table, and like taste through a couple of ounces of each one of them. Like, it's a very kind of, you know, sterile way to experience wine. We all know this. You know, when we're drinking wine, it's usually you've gotten off work, you're getting ready to cook dinner, you got some friends coming over, you're going out to dinner, you're hanging out at a barbecue, you're going to a concert, whatever. Like, there's always an experience involved in consuming wine. Whether that experience is catching up on the Blacklist, like I have been sitting on my couch watching way too much Netflix over the last couple of weeks, or you're going out and doing something, right? There's always something tied to it. And a lot of times, it's just about the hang. It's about whether you're on the couch or you're going out, it's about the people you're with and kind of the just stuff that's happening around you. Like, you get to kind of operate within this great little bubble of this experience. And everyone we've been talking to lately seems to be of the thought process that, like, hey, some of these, like, quote-unquote, like, winery experiences that Napa has really leaned hard into, particularly kind of, like, post-COVID, have just gone too far. It's gone too far. Number one, the experiences are way too expensive. Number two, they're not really furthering, like, the brand, the message, the quality of the wine even, or like how this wine is like relatable and how it fits into how you live your life, right? You know, this is why, you know, like when folks, like this group that we had out, big shout out to a friend of ours, Ashley, who brought some of her clients and friends out our way over the weekend. This is why, these were folks that were veterans to the Valley. They live in the greater Bay Area. They come up here all the time. They love wine. They've got a big wine collection. You know, when I greet them and we walk into the cellar, like many of you listening to this have done, and some of you have experienced this, you know, when we, if you're new, very typically, and you don't know a lot about us, or maybe you're new-ish to Napa, we kind of hang out for a minute. We have a little sip of white wine before we go get seated. I kind of give you the lay of the land. But if you visited before, even if you have friends who have been there before, if you are like a veteran to Napa, you've done winery tours. You know what barrels look like. You know what a cave is. Like you know how the process kind of works. You know, I don't do my spiel. Like, we go sit down and we start hanging out. And that's not because I want to, like, you know, that's not because I'm, like, in a hurry trying to, like, get through it. It's because I want to do what's most pertinent to you when you come and visit. And the way we were talking about it at the tasting table on Monday was, you know, they're like, thank God we didn't have to, like, stand there and just, like, talk about, you know, the different types of barrels you use and why the cave is important, why the temperature's the same and why it's good for aging versus like a...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Warehouse and all this stuff. Like, we've heard all that. We've been on a bunch of winery tours. We don't need to, like, relive this. It's a lot like what the DC universe is doing, like, right now and has been doing for, like, decades when it comes to, like, Batman and Superman. Every single new movie comes out, goes right back to, like, oh, this is where Superman came from. Oh, and by the way, Bruce Wayne's parents got shot in an alley. We've seen it in every movie. You don't need to do it again. Move on. Everybody knows the origin story. Stop it. We all get it. You know, he's an orphan from the planet Krypton. He's a troubled, traumatized billionaire, like, just who's got a lot of toys. Let's just get into the action, okay? We don't need to rehash the history of these superheroes. We all know what happened. Keep it moving, right? And I think that, you know, is the problem wineries have right now, is that they've leaned on these experiences. They feel they have to, like, you know, wax poetically about their facility and their vineyards and why they're so important and why you should love their wine so much. And it's like, can we just sit down and drink some wine and, like, get to know each other a little bit? And yeah, we're going to talk about the property and why these wines are the way they are. And we'll hit, you know, some of these high points, but let's just let the conversation kind of flow. And there's so many salespeople that are just not good at their jobs, you know, and they have to hit their bullet points. They're going, like, even if you know why, you know, French oak typically has a more subtle influence than American oak, or, you know, why punch downs can be potentially advantageous for certain varieties versus, like, pump overs, or why stainless steel use is important with white wine, with refreshing white wines. Like, even if you know all that and they still kind of continue down, like, hey, we need to explain this to you. And you're like, no, like, I get it. Like, I've been here before. I drink a lot of wine. This is useless. You're wasting my time, right? The best example I can give of this, and some of you probably heard this story, is there was a gal when I was working for another winery. I had a friend of mine come up with his family. I was hosting another group. They were a little early, so I told this gal that was working for me, I was like, hey, go pour them some rosé. They're going to hang out for a minute. I'm just going to finish up with these folks, clean up, and then I'll be right out. And by the time I cleaned up and went out there, she was explaining how rosé is made to someone who's been making wine for 30 years. And he looked at me and I just kind of crossed my arms and smiled. I'm like, this is going to be a learning experience for this person. And I hope it stuck. I think it did. But, you know, read the fucking room a little bit, right? Like, get to know the people in front of you and, like, what the pertinent information is going to be. I appreciate the fact for some of these wineries that have spent, you know, tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars in building out facilities and doing renovations and trying to provide, like, a Michelin star thing. Is that actually connecting with your consumer base? Does that actually make any sense at all to do? And I think so many have kind of leaned that direction that it's getting stale. It's gotten old and it's gotten old really fast because everybody went that direction, except for maybe a handful of us. And it's just like, I get it. There are some places that just need to be that echelon, right? You know? And they're going to be a little exclusive. And they're going to be a little like, hey, this is how we do things. And it's going to be really nice and really styled out. And you're going to feel as though you're dining at French Laundry while you're tasting our wine. And it's going to be amazing. I've been uninvited to some of those places. Actually, this is kind of a funny story. Sidebar here. Kind of a funny story. You know, it's... Oh my gosh. This is something I don't think I might get in trouble for saying this, but so I might change the names a little bit, but we'll see. But there's a new winery that was opening, and at the time it rhymes with Tom Notori. You'll get it if you know. Rhymes with Tom Notori, and they were inviting folks within like the industry to like come up and like hang out for a little bit. And me and a friend were like, yeah, like let's go up, you know, it'd be great. Cause this is a part of this like big, you know, sect of the Valley that has really high end wines. You know, we have clients that look for those kinds of experiences. And if, you know, it's not going to be for everybody, we know that, like, there's not, everyone's going to spend a few hundred or thousands of dollars on a bottle of wine. Like, this is for the right people, you know, who are actually going to go up there and probably buy bottles, or at least bottles, if not cases, get on the mailing list, allocation list, whatever. Like, we understand the game. And I understand why they did this, but my buddy and I were uninvited because we were not of, our brands were not of the caliber that they wanted to be associated with. Like, okay, like, I get it. Whatever. Did it rub me the wrong way? 100%. Because it's like, come on, guys. Like, really? Like, you're not even open yet. Like, you actually offered, you like, you invited us. Like, we were going to come up. And then you said, oh, yeah, actually, you know, we were reevaluating. Literally, they were like, we were reevaluating the list of, like, who's coming up. And, you know, sorry, but your brands don't really align with, you know, who we want to be associated with, was basically the gist of the message. This is years ago. So, you know, whatever. Water under the bridge at this point. And I get it. Like, so to that end, like, I understand that there are brands. This is like reasons why you can't just go visit Screaming Eagle, right? Number one, I don't think from a permitting standpoint you can. But number two, there's a layer of exclusivity and like that high end thing of like, you have to know somebody who knows somebody. And once you're in, you're not even really in yet. Like, you have, like, there's these layers of exclusivity, right? Fine, whatever. But the overwhelming majority of the wine drinking public, that's not a thing. So, you know, is it nice knowing people who have worked at some of those places or that are adjacent to some of those places that are like, you know, it's nice to have that in my back pocket. You know, we had a client of ours that, you know, kind of last minute was like, hey, is there any chance we get into French Laundry? I said, no, but I know some people, let me call around and see what we can do. And it didn't happen. We weren't able to make it happen because it's, you know, everyone wants to go there. And they don't make exceptions for anybody. They don't make exceptions for the most wealthy and richest people, you know, in the world. They, you know, book the tables and as they come, and just like anybody else. And it's a wait list if you don't book it at that time, and you have to work your way through the system. Like, it just is what it is because it's in such high demand. So when you're in that high demand, like, I totally get it, you know, fine. It's fine. It's all good. It is all good. But at the same time, you know, there's a big chunk of wineries kind of below that level. And if you're trying to like level up to that and do these really intense experiential things, you know, with, you know, food pairings and like couple hour experiences, like is that, like, I get it. Like, I'll put it like it's the French Laundry is a good example, because the French Laundry is an amazing experience. It is. If you're a foodie and you love eating for like 4 hours straight, all those little bites and everything, it's the best. It's really fun. It's delicious. It's great with a group of people. If it's just two of you as a couple, that can be a lot, unless you love talking to your spouse for like 4 hours straight. That can be tough, you know, for some people, you know. So it's nice to go with a group and enjoy the experience together, right? And create that memory. But it's not for everybody. I know plenty of folks that are like into good food, but they're like, I have no interest in going to French Laundry. It's just not my thing. I'd rather spend my money on other stuff. So it is all relative, right? And I think the problem is that a lot of wineries kind of went that direction and didn't understand what their consumers actually wanted. I think Napa in general is having this issue of not meeting consumers where they are right now, which is why there's a downturn in tourism, why Sonoma is kind of having a little bit of a bounce back right now. Like, you go over to the Sonoma Square right now, it's jamming. You go to downtown St. Helena, it's dead as a doornail, right? So there's a lot of like reworking that needs to happen. And people, it's still such a young industry. It's still such a young, you know, thing. Like, there's so much that's being thrown at the wall right now. You have a lot of people in the last 10 years that are new to this industry that frankly have no business being in this industry because I'm glad you made a ton of money in tech. I'm glad you've done really well for yourself, you know, but you're not here. You're an absentee owner. You've hired really well with some great consultants and people for you, but you're not doing anything to like further this business. You're just looking at a spreadsheet and a P&L statement. And it's like, okay, well, we need to do this, that, and that, and change the tasting fee to this. And by the way, raise prices, fire that person, and let's just keep it moving forward. And then you do have, you know, plenty of owners of that echelon that are intimately involved and want to be a part of the process. They come into town for blending sessions. They're here to talk to the people on the front line, and they do a great job of being present. You know, but it's tough. Like, this industry is hard enough as it is to make it. But if you're like just head down, driving forward, head in the sand, whatever you want to call it, just trying to be this luxurious Napa thing, that does not connect with people. Like, it doesn't. Like, everybody's making good wine out here. Everyone has a good view. Everyone's got a cool experience. Do you need, like realistically, like, what is going to convince someone to buy, like, someone who's been coming out here for 10 years, like, what's going to convince them to jump ship from a brand that they love to your new brand? You know, we encounter that. You know, there are plenty of folks that come and visit us that are like, yeah, we've been coming out to Napa for a long time. We love your wines, but we love buying from these other places. Well, I'm like, well, don't sacrifice wine you love just because you like mine now too. I mean, buy a few bottles, buy a case, whatever, and have them in the lineup. But if you already have 1,000 bottles at home, like, you don't really need to buy a bunch more wine right now. Like, you've got a lot to drink, unless you're just, you love wine and you love having the options and you're collecting and, you know, you're like what we are. That's why I have this giant ass wine fridge behind me here. You know, we've got, you know, between two wine fridges, actually, we've probably got like, you know, 300, 400 bottles just right there. I've got a bunch more in storage. And that's because it's like older vintage stuff and like cool things that I want to hang on to that we'll be drinking forever. But I don't buy a lot of wine anymore. I mean, that's not true. I do buy a lot of wine. But, you know, it's more of like the more ready-to-drink stuff, because there's a lot of stuff that we have that's aging and we're consuming on the red wine side of things. So it's a lot of more like easier-going reds, things that we can crush, you know, in a backyard barbecue kind of setting. That's the stuff we buy a lot of right now. But like the stuff that we're trying to age, we got a bunch of that. So we're slowly like working through that. And then we backfill a little bit every year, kind of as needed, just to keep that fridge full back there. And it's all good. Like, we found the groove for us. And I think many wine drinkers have also found that same groove. And wineries haven't been paying attention. Just not paying attention. it's the, you know, let us, you know, shower you with, you know, food pairings and high-end experiences and invitations to cruises and things around the world or country. And it's, and, you know, it's like, is it worn out? Like, I feel like it's worn out. And there's like this reworking that a lot of people, I mean, shoot, we're doing a lot of that too right now. It's like we're reworking a lot of our portfolio and the wines that we offer and what's actually going to be available in the next couple of years, because there's stuff that just wasn't working for us. And there's a lot of people out there that just keep banging their head against this wall of these high-end experiences, these wines that aren't really selling that well anymore. And it's like, okay, well, you can keep banging. If you got the deep pockets and you want to keep banging your head against the wall, you know, please, please go for it. But when it comes to like reworking that stuff, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to look at it and say, you know, this is working, this is not working. You know, some of you might be disappointed to hear, like, I've been pretty open about this, but it's like, we haven't made any Pinot Noir in our portfolio since 2021. It's going on 4 years since we made any of that wine, because as much as people loved it and have enjoyed it over the years, it wasn't selling. Period. Like, it just, we had inventory kind of stacking up. You know, people enjoyed it for what it is. People still enjoy it for what it is, for the wine that we have kind of left over from those vintages. But we have more than enough to sell for basically the next few years, because it wasn't selling a lot when we were releasing it normally. And that was, you know, 2 years ago would have been when we released that 2021 officially. And now we've got some, you know, we got a little bit of a library going back to like 2017, you know. So we're kind of working through some of these older vintages, but the Pinot's going away eventually. As much as I loved making it, as much as people have enjoyed it over the years, some people have, some people haven't, that's totally fine, but we've made that adjustment. You know, with Brittany starting her label over the last couple of years, like, does it make sense that we are making a Chenin Blanc and a Pinot Gris? Do we really need two white wines in kind of this portfolio that we've created over the years? Maybe, maybe not. You know, we've continued making those wines kind of side by side over the last couple of years. But that's likely to change as we move forward this year and into next year, because it's like we're kind of, you know, muddying the waters here. You know, when it comes to the winery experiences we're talking about, you know, you're seeing, you know, layoffs in tasting rooms and chefs getting axed and programs getting cut and, you know, people trying to figure out which way is up. And, you know, it's the nature of any business. Like, you've got to kind of adapt, overcome, and move forward in some way, you know, for up, around, over, under, whatever obstacle that's in front of you. And when you have a tough market like this, it's like, okay, now like everything's kind of fair game. So there's a lot of stuff that's being reworked right now. And this experiential thing is a part of that, as are certain wines from certain wineries that are just not going to be made anymore because they're not working. I mean, you're seeing this on the big scale, you know, with, you know, the vintage bankruptcy last year, the Duckhorn portfolio rolling up a lot of stuff, the Toomey and Silver Oak family, Toomey that's owned by the Silver Oak family, them rolling up some of their tasting rooms and closing things down. Like, there's everybody's trying to sort this out right now, and we've talked a lot about that over the last, like, you know, year, basically, at this point. But what's really interesting to me, I suppose, like whether you're reworking that wine portfolio or the experiences, like, why did it take you this long? You know, when we went into last year and we started having a hard time, I mean, maybe it's because we're like the husband-wife duo and we can do things on a dime. We don't got to ask anybody. There's no manager or corporate team above us that we got to get like approvals for. We can just act. That certainly helps. There's less friction to changing what we do because we can just do it, right? But the second that we were starting to have a tough time last year, like, we really started leaning on, okay, where can we explore, you know, new opportunities? Like, what are we doing as far as like experiences at the winery and stuff like that? You know, where can we sell wine? Can we do more events? Do we need to travel more? Do we let's start throwing stuff at the wall. And that's why we started opening up, you know, more, you know, things to like distribution, basically. Like, hey, we're going to sell some wine in Texas through a distributor. We're going to sell some wine in Missouri. We might be opening up New Jersey, New York, as well as Florida. Like we're throwing stuff at the wall, which we haven't done that basically since 2018, really. Because it didn't monetarily didn't make sense. But at this point it's like, hey, cash flow is cash flow right now. And we have wine to sell. So we got to find a way to, you know, sell some wine, you know, actually it's interesting, you know, bring that up. I had a phone call yesterday and kind of, you know, we heard, speaking of New York, New Jersey, we had a conversation with our former distributor out there, that hasn't, they haven't ordered any wine, I think, since 2017, maybe 2018. Got an email out of the blue after our summer newsletter went out, because they're still on our mailing list. And they said, hey, you know, we haven't worked with your wines in a while. It took a while to sell through them, but we've got some decent traction. We want to see what else is available. And actually, the conversation was really great with them, because they were like, hey, they're typically an importer. I think mostly Italian wines, actually. But importing a lot of stuff from, you know, across the pond. And they said, hey, just with the shakeup of tariffs and the uncertainty of getting, you know, certain, you know, suppliers into the market, like we want to add a few more domestic labels to our portfolio. We've worked with you in the past. The wines have worked well after they got some traction. So let's see what you have available. I was like, oh, shit, are the tariffs working? Jury's out still. But it's interesting. I think you're seeing, you know, it is a good, you know, this is one, you know, small outfit back east. You know, it's not, you know, one of the big guys like an RNDC that's had a plenty of big shakeups over the last couple of works, the last couple of weeks, or, you know, Southern Glaciers. But, you know, if you see some other businesses within your orbit kind of adjusting to this kind of stuff, then you probably should be able to adjust and be creative and do things that, you know, maybe you go back to basics like this, and, you know, because that's how we sold most of our wine back in the day, was through distribution. We didn't have a direct program. We didn't have a wine club. But maybe going back to basics like that is, you know, kind of the keep it simple, stupid, you know, Occam's razor method of doing things, right? Same thing with the winery experiences. Like, just sit down and hang out with people. Don't do the white linen, Michelin star, you know, every bite, like a bunch of little bites that are perfectly curated. Like, people like that. But when you're visiting a winery and sitting amongst some barrels, like, is that what you, like, need as a consumer? Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe some of you can chime in and be like, hey, this is the kind of stuff that wineries need to be doing. We need more food pairings. We need more dialed in, more white linen tablecloths, you know, and we want you to just extol the virtues of your brand and your winemaking and all the nitty-gritty details. I mean, that hasn't worked for me in the past. You know, I used to think when I would present my wines and, you know, whether it was to distributors or to, you know, accounts, you know, out and around the country or to folks coming into the cave, it was like, hey, I need to get through like my spiel. I need to do this. And I started to learn very, very quickly to, you know, hopefully meet people where they are. You know, how into wine are you really? Like, what are some of your favorite wines? You know, is there a certain style that you typically lean on? Is there a certain style that you want to get into? You know, what don't you like about the wine industry? And what barriers can I break down for you? You know, I think that's the kind of stuff that's more important. Man, I keep thinking about the conversation with this former distributor yesterday. And it's, of course, like global economically, I think there was a bunch of new tariffs and stuff announced. What was it? Yesterday or the day before on a bunch of other countries that are all like 20-30% or whatever. And the fact that we got this call and I think like a lot of us, we all have had our doubts about like, hey, this economic policy is something. I don't know what it is, but it's something. And I mentioned this in our Totally Tariffed episode, go back and listen to that, of like, hey, if this is the goal is to support, you know, domestic and the local industry and have a little bit more parity with pricing when competing with what's coming in from abroad, like, I'm kind of all for it. And it took 3 months, you know, but here we are. We officially got a call from somebody that was like, hey, we're just trying to shore up our supply chain and we want more domestic producers because we're not sure what we're going to be getting from abroad. And I'm like, holy shit, it's working. Of course, this is, you know, we're a very small fish in a very large ocean of wine producers and distributors and all that. But it was like, holy crap, This is crazy. Crazy what's going on. It's been a while. It's been a wild couple of weeks. I talked about how slow it's been at the very beginning of this episode. And like, it's nice to take some time off and like relax. And yet here we are. There's like, it feels like so much is going on between these winery experience woes, you know, people reworking their portfolios and how things are adjusting in the industry. Like, it's this big, I don't know if it's a, there's a lot of people, even myself, have been talking about, like, this kind of seems like that correction that maybe the wine industry needs. It's, for me, it's starting to feel less like a correction and more like a bump in the road. I mean, we'll see. It's really going to, the correction's really going to be, you know, if we see a bunch more brands start to close and roll up and the great market continues to implode for growers. Like, if we see that into this next year and into early 2026, a bunch more, you know, maybe more Chapter 11s and a lot of merger M&A going on, then yeah, then it's probably full on correction time, you know. But I think, you know, for a lot of us small guys, you know, there's a lot of us that are very agile, very willing to turn on a dime and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. I think that there's a lot less stress and I think worry right now. I think people are starting to look a little bit more positively at what's going on, albeit the times are still tough. They're going to be tough for at least another, probably, if, I mean, we're looking at, you know, realistically, it could be a couple year trend, you know, when it's all said and done. But we'll see. You know, we're going to have to sit here and we're going to have to sit here at the table and play the game because, you know, that's the only way you're going to get through it. You know, if you quit the game, then you're out. You know, that's the only way it goes. And sometimes that's the best thing you can do is fold, right? That might be the best thing for a lot of these businesses that are out there really having a hard time right now, whether it's because of their lack of visitation and these experience, you know, woes, whether it's people doing, you know, being a little too exclusive and a little too hoity-toity, and now all of a sudden they're kind of clamoring to try and pick up business where they can, you know, or maybe it's, you know, trying to do those portfolio reworks and making these adjustments to find ways to meet consumers where they are. And hopefully make wine more accessible to you folks. Make wine more accessible to you folks, hopefully at a good price, at a good value. And, you know, for us, you know, and we'll see how the fucking tariff thing actually works out. I can't believe that was the conversation I actually had yesterday. I was like, oh man, I can't believe there's actually something positive that came out of this. This is crazy. It'll be fine. Everything's fine. All right. Thank you all so much for tuning in. It was kind of bouncing all over the place there, but when you've been off for a couple of weeks and you got to play some catch up, you know, that's what you got to do. So be sure to follow us on try that again. 1, 2, 3. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. That's YouTube where you can see the video version of this. You can see me dance around my office and make all my crazy hand gestures and drop things on the floor and hopefully a cat strolls in or whatever. You can check us out on Instagram, the Book of Face, the social network formerly known as Twitter. Be sure to like, subscribe to the show. Actually, in the description of the show here, there's a link to our summer newsletter just in case you didn't get it. Check it out. See what we got going on this summer and into the fall. Hopefully we'll see some of you out here in Napa sometime soon. We are officially home for the summer and through the end of harvest, so we're going to be here for a while, just trucking away, doing what we do best, and that's making good wine, y'all. That's what we're going to be doing. So have a great rest of your day, week, and we'll see you next time here on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.